Well, it's not going to be one of those days that everybody remembers that you said to yourself, ah, yes, 2 weeks ago, April 2nd of 2021, things took a drastic change. We're never going to look back on April 2nd of 2021 and think that. But as I was thinking about today's show in the last couple of weeks, that is going to be a day, and that is going to be a moment that, to me, a lot of things changed here, and they changed very quickly. And why do I bring that up? I saw this poll yesterday that the majority of Americans disapprove of how President Biden is handling the southern border crisis. And I'm like, wow, that's amazing because, I mean, we know the media is carrying his water as much as it possibly can, right? So the fact that a new poll shows that only 29% of Americans approve of how Biden is handling the situation at the Mexican border, while 55% of Americans disapprove. I thought to myself, geez, that's a big deal, especially coming from a Quinnipiac poll, which if you follow these polls and who does these polls closely, you'll know that Quinnipiac is not typically one that's, favors conservative thoughts, I'll put it that way. And they've got a poll that says less than 3 in 10 Americans feel like, yeah, the situation down at the border is going well, despite all the media coverage of it and the media covering for the administration on it. And 2 weeks ago today was the day that we found out Major League Baseball was moving its All-Star game out of Atlanta because of a complete lie by Stacey Abrams and others that somehow it was Jim Crow 2.0 to require people to have voter ID. And you think about the last 2 weeks, and there are 4 major issues to me that have really picked up steam over the last 2 weeks. And I believe that the dam is breaking and people are starting to wake up to what's going on here. And the move of the Major League Baseball All-Star Game was that triggering point that set off a lot of other items. And what are those other items? First off, you've got the border, as I just mentioned. Secondly, you've got this $2.3 trillion infrastructure plan that was really and has been anything but infrastructure. I mean, it's like a couple hundred billion of that money is actually for roads and bridges. And since then, you've had people like Kirsten Gillibrand, a U.S. senator out of New York, try to convince you that things like child care is infrastructure. Remember that tweet that she had that went viral? She listed off like 3 things that had nothing to do with infrastructure, and she insisted to us that they are infrastructure. You see, you got to catch up here. Words don't mean what words mean anymore, okay? They get redefined into what they want them to mean. That's the game that gets played here. And then last but not least is this Supreme Court deal. And I'll dive into more of this at the bottom of the hour here on KCMO Talk Radio. By the way, we made it to the weekend. I'm so excited about what I'm talking about here. I forgot to wish you a happy Friday, but happy Friday. Made it to the end of the week. But those 4 issues right there, and it was triggered by the Major League Baseball All-Star Game moving itself out of Atlanta, Georgia. And that led to people kind of opening their eyes to this border crisis. That led to people saying, do we really need to spend another $2.5 trillion? Like, I may not be a math whiz, I may not be an economics expert here, but is that good for the country to spend another $2.5 trillion on things when we've just spent trillions of dollars over the past year of monies we did not have due to COVID-19? Does that really make sense? Is that a wise use of our time and our money? Because somehow it's got to get paid back, right? I mean, it's pretty basic stuff, but somehow it's got to get paid back. And then you've also got the situation with the Supreme Court, and all of them kind of pull together and say, geez, it's been a rough 2 weeks. It's been a really rough 2 weeks. And people say to me, they're like, oh, this is disheartening. I see all this stuff and it's like, when are people going to wake up? Well, that's why I bring to you this poll. And that's why I wanted to share with you the importance of this poll, where you're not alone. If you do not approve of how things are going at the border, you are in the majority. Now, you would not believe that if you just kind of took in cable news all day, but that's true. You would be in the majority if you're like, hey, I'm not thrilled with how things are going down there right now. And I don't think it's great to have hundreds of kids jammed into these places, by the way, in the middle of a pandemic, and not disincentivizing anybody to do anything. If you haven't listened, by the way, to our interview this week with Jake LaTurner, you can find that on our podcast. Jake LaTurner, Kansas congressman out of the 2nd District, he was down at the border last week, and he met a two young kids, siblings, who actually have parents up here in Kansas who are just trying to get up to them. And gosh dang, I mean, you feel for them, right? The human part of you is like, I mean, how could you not want to see your parents? If you're the parents, how could you not want to see your kids? That's not what it's about, though. It's about how do you function as a country to have a solid immigration process that is not simply just open borders? How do you do it? And this administration has failed miserably in that category every step of the way, and we're not even on day 100. I mean, think about that. We're on day, like, I don't know, 86 or somewhere around there. We're 3 months into this thing. And it feels like the steam is getting lost a little bit. You know, I was looking at Bill O'Reilly, of course, buddy of the show here. Last night on his show, he does this every night. He shares with you Joe Biden's schedule. Yesterday, Joe Biden's schedule included lunch with Kamala Harris at 12:30, and a meeting with a lobbyist group at 1:30. That was it. That was the whole thing on the schedule. I want that job, all right? I got to figure out how to get that job. Pays a lot better, got a lot more power, and sounds a lot easier to me, too. I need that gig. Maybe after the show, John and I will figure out a way to apply for it. But I got
to
get that.
I'm working my way there. As you get older, you find your way to slide your way through there. I was told there'd be pudding.
Where's the pudding? Where's the pudding? Oh, boy. I mean, that sounds like a great job. Lunch at 12:30, a meeting at 1:30. Sign me up. So I don't mean to make light of any of this because it's been a rough couple of weeks here going into the weekend. But as you are talking to people over the last couple of weeks, does it feel like the tide is turning just a little bit? I mean, I talk to a lot of you every day on this show, on social media, emails, Facebook messages, everything else. And I just think we're going to look back on April 2nd, and it's never going to be a day that lives in infamy or anybody remembers. But the day that that All-Star game was moved, the day that MLB caved to woke America unnecessarily and incredulously over a lie, and what has happened since then, maybe that turning point that we look at here over the next several months and say that's when things started to change. That's when people said, you know, I'm not sure I'm cool with this. I'm not sure I'm wild about the idea of people who hold pretty extreme views, regardless of what side of the aisle that they're on, then in turn pushing a national agenda and pushing a lie that is forcing baseball games to be moved out of cities. That doesn't sound great. And who's pushing back against that right now? Who? I mean, who's doing it? Well, it's one party doing it, and it ain't the Democratic Party. It's not. 5767710. We're on the text line here at 816-576-7710. And they can't push back against it because then they'll eat their own. They can't. All right, we've got a lot coming up here in a busy show with you. But next, I want to get into whether or not the Kansas City Star could try any harder to scare you. I mean, they really are trying their best. They always do. But I'll tell you why and what they've got here for you coming up on KCMO Talk Radio. All right, I you guys are always getting on me for this on the text line. Pete, these Sanjay Gupta commercials are unbelievable. I'm just a guy that works at the company, okay? There are certain things that you hear that are way above my pay grade. I appreciate that you guys think I wield a ton of power in a, you know, corporation that's got hundreds of employees, but I'm just one man here, John.
Yeah, I think my favorite response to things like that is, look, if I had this kind of time, a command over time and space, I wouldn't be doing this job.
I like that line. I like that line very much. Just understand, everything that comes out of your speakers, I do not have complete control over, okay?
You can go the other way and say, my duties here are largely ceremonial.
Kevin, you're Lone Jack to kick it off on a Friday. What's up, Kevin? How are you?
Yes. I'm fine. How are you?
Doing well. What's happening, buddy?
Oh, not too much. I just want to suggest something. They say that requiring voter ID is racist, and I would say it's exactly the opposite. To say black people are not smart enough or resourceful enough to get an ID to vote is racist.
Of course.
And they're just using the race card to make it easy for voter fraud.
Yep. I mean, it's incredibly insulting to think that any group of people outside of those, you know, who might be like mentally disabled, but any group of people based on their skin color to suggest that they can't access something like an ID when literally you can't get a job, you can't fly, you can't do anything without an ID, Kevin, you know that. I mean,
yeah.
It's wildly insulting and it is wildly racist. But if you say that somehow now you are the racist, it's an amazing, amazing time we're living through.
Exactly. It kind of makes you scared to say things, and that's what they want.
Yeah. Yeah, no, you're right. You're right about that. Thanks for the call there, Kevin. Have a great weekend. I could not agree more. They want to scare you into the idea that even though what you're saying makes complete sense, it's just like common sense, the conversation Kevin and I just had, but they want to scare you into the idea that if you make sense and if you have common sense and you say things like, hey, are you saying that someone based on their skin color can't get an ID? And that's why you would not want to require some form of voter ID. That's somehow racist because it scares you into not using your common sense. That's what in many ways this is about. So good points there. Nice job by Kevin to kick it off. All right. Let me tell you what is here in the Kansas City Star. And they're trying to scare you. And it's so unnecessary. But first off, I got to give this texter of the day here. This is pretty good. Pete, you know what scares me about the Kansas City Star? The daily paper costs $2.50. The thickness of the paper is like a sales circular, and the information is worthless. That's well done on the text line. Very nice job. I mean, that's an expensive roll of toilet paper is what that is. Anyway, here's the headline from the Kansas City Star. With over 140 new COVID-19 cases in the Kansas City area, rolling average rises slightly. Okay, let me actually go through this with you here. So the most cases in a day that Kansas City had was 1,200 cases in a day back on November 22nd. The seven-day rolling average on that day was 1,200 cases. So we're now sitting at 105 on a seven-day rolling average. We have sat at about 100 to 125 cases per day for the better part of 5 to 6 weeks in this metro. Not Kansas City proper, but the entire metro. 2.5 million people. So, I mean, instead of having a headline like, I don't know, COVID cases remain at record lows across Kansas City. No. They can't give you a headline like that. You see, they cannot have you thinking that there is still good news on this issue. They can't. Instead, they got to give you this. With over 140 new COVID-19 cases in the Kansas City area, rolling average rises slightly. What? I mean, are you desperate for a headline to try to get a click on a non-story and a non-event? How about this? Cases remain down well over 90% over a five-week period. How about that for a headline? I don't know if I did it quickly enough. I don't know if I jammed enough words into a short enough period of time for that to be a headline, but it sounds pretty good. And by the way, it's really accurate, what I just said. It's really accurate, and it doesn't try to get you to click on the article out of fear porn. Oh my gosh, cases are slightly up. How are we going to make it through tomorrow? Oh, hide for the weekend. Run, run. How are we going to do it? Here's what they write. The seven-day rolling average for new cases rose to 105, according to data maintained by the Star. The last time the average was this high was on March 22nd. 1 week ago, it sat at 101. 2 weeks ago, it was 89. Okay. And you go back to March 22nd, and it was right around 120-ish, give or take. Okay. But still, look at what we're at. Whether it's 125 or 100, you're talking about such a small number, it's meaningless. It's absolutely meaningless. Like, this is not a story. 100 COVID cases in the metro is not a story. But not only is it a story to the Kansas City Star, it's got to have a scary headline That's what it's got to do. It's got to have a big, scary headline to make you click on it and say, oh my goodness. Like, we all know COVID is still a thing. I'm not sitting here and telling you that COVID's not a thing. I'm not sitting here and telling you that it still can't be very dangerous to certain people. I'm not doing any of that. All I'm telling you is you have to put everything into perspective. Because when you see that, you say, okay, 140, whoa, that's kind of big. Well, not if I told you that we were having 1,000 cases per day in the KC Metro from basically early November all the way through the new year, give or take. Suddenly it doesn't sound as dangerous now, does it? 5767710. Let's say to Libby. She's in Waldo. What's up, Libby? Good morning. Go ahead.
Good morning, Pete. Thank you, and thanks, John. Here's what I'm thinking about this whole thing about the star and all the frustration levels of frustration. As long as they can keep the population frustrated and stressed and confused and angry, guess who has the power?
Mm-hmm.
They have the power.
Yeah.
I said, well, as long as we can do this, this is the way we can control the population and get things that we want done, because they can't say no to us. And that's my concern, Pete. How is it that we've gotten to the point that there is so much fear that people are not willing just to say no?
Well, Libby, that's a great question, and thank you for making the call. I'm going to answer more of that. How did we get to that point? I will do more of that coming up. But to your bigger point, I believe people are saying no. I believe people are getting their vaccines if they want them. They're feeling much better. They should feel much better. And then other people are just saying, you know, numbers are way down. I'm healthy. I'm going to live my life. And, you know, if they're not healthy and they don't want the vaccine, well, you know, guess what? That's on them. They're allowed to make that decision for themselves, are they not? News is 2 minutes away. We are back in five. By the way, speaking of that, you see what Dr. Fauci said to Jim Jordan yesterday? It's all coming up. I'm just trying to figure out, you know, what the threshold is here that we have to reach. That's all I'm trying to figure out. I just want a consistent message on what the goal is here on, you know, getting the vaccines out there. And God bless the process and the way that has gone. Obviously, a couple of slight concerns here with Johnson & Johnson. But either way, you got millions of people getting vaccinated every day. Things are getting back to normal. Air travel is 90% of what it was pre-pandemic per American Airlines. So people are living. That's whether you like it or not, they're living. And I don't know, maybe Fauci wants another couple of social media, or I should say cable news hits. I don't know. Maybe that's what he's looking for here. Big TV contract. I don't know. Our next caller is, I think he looks for a radio contract sometimes. He's Don in Blue Springs. What's up, Dono? Good morning.
Hey, Pete, I think a quote from John Adams is in order here. When he was defending those British soldiers for murder charges on the Boston Massacre, he said this in closing argument. He said, facts are stubborn things. Whatever our wishes, our inclinations, or the dictates of our passions, they cannot alter the state of facts and evidence. The facts are America is by far the leader in total cases, over 32 million COVID cases. United States of America leads by double or triple figures in the number of deaths, 570,000 deaths. And you want a figure? Dr. Fauci gave us the figure way, way back when we were last spring. When we were opening up too early, when Donald Trump was pushing, got to open up. Dr. Fauci said we shouldn't be doing opening up until the figure gets down to about 10,000 new cases a day. And we're at 60.
Hey, so Don, hold on.
That's it.
Let me throw a pesky fact at you right now, Don, okay? And don't just hear me out here, okay? Right now, the top 10 states with the most COVID-19 activity at this point in time are all states that have been some of the most locked down states in this country. Michigan, Rhode Island, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Minnesota, Delaware, Connecticut, and New York. If lockdowns worked, why are we sitting here with the highest rated states right now on a 7-day rolling average, all being deep blue lockdown states?
Well, I can't explain all the ins and outs of how COVID spreads, but I do know. But I do know this. I do know this.
So, but you just told me that COVID, if we listen to Fauci and we all just locked down last summer for an extra couple of weeks.
You asked for a figure. I gave you a figure. But I do know this, Pete.
You
know what's going on in Europe? This is raging in Europe again. The COVID is raging. Their numbers are off the charts.
And they don't really have the vaccines.
Whatever's happening there is going to come here. Okay? So you ignorant people who will not get vaccines, I wonder if they were the people who decided they weren't going to have a polio vaccine, or they weren't going to have a smallpox vaccine, or they weren't going to get their diphtheria shot.
Hey, Don, let me ask you.
Yeah, you don't have to have those, but you can't attend public school in the United States of America.
You got your vaccine. You got your vaccine, Don? You good? You got your vaccine?
Absolutely.
You a Pfizer or Moderna guy?
Pfizer.
Pfizer. Okay. So if you feel good about yourself, and you should, God bless you, man. And if I was you, I would too. You know, I we haven't met Don, but I can't imagine, you know, with the way you get worked up, I can't imagine your health is outstanding. So I'd be getting it too if I was you, okay? So if that's the case and you're vaccinated, just live, baby, just live, right? It's all good. It's all good, brother.
Well, my vaccination just wasn't for me. It was for you. Oh. It was for other people. Mm. I'm not selfish like people who don't get vaccines.
Okay.
This is what I believe. I'll leave you with this.
Okay.
And you're going to say it's silly. All the people who won't get vaccines, let's give them the state of Alaska, move them all up there. They can't come back down to the lower 48 anymore. They can go up there and kill themselves up there, and then we'll go on.
You're ridiculous. Goodbye. Hey, wait. Are you coming to the Jackson County GOP dinner tomorrow night?
I'm watching the paint peel off my house.
Oh, jeez. Goodbye. He's watching the paint. Guy had a free ticket to dinner, all the drinks on the house, and he turns us down. Unbelievable. Unbelievable, this guy. I mean, guy had all the drinks he wanted tomorrow night at the Jackson County GOP event. I'll be there. Eric Schmidt will be there as the keynote. I'm your MC. Eric Greitens, the McCloskeys. Going to be a pretty, I mean, that you put all these characters in a room together, that's got a chance to be a hell of a night. I mean, throw Don in Blue Springs, you got some real fireworks, but whatever. All right, he doesn't want to come. He doesn't want to show up. They would have bought him a ticket. The only thing Don had to do was not start drinking until we got there, which I think that was the deal breaker for him. That was it. Carl's in KC North. What's up, Carl? Go ahead.
Good morning. How you doing, man? Love Good. Don. Yeah. I love Don.
He's one of a kind, you know, huh?
Oh, he sure is, and thank God. What I was going to say was that I was watching that thing with Fauci and Jordan as well. And, you know, it's not about safety, it's about control. He would not give a number. He would not give a number. And, you know, Don said, I'm not taking this vaccine for me, I'm taking it for all of you. You don't have to take it for me, Don. You can wear a hazmat suit. But why do I have to wear a mask? I'm never getting a vaccine. I will not get a vaccine for something that's a 99% survival rate. It's absolutely ludicrous.
Yeah.
And I can't believe that people will allow this to go on this long, that they haven't risen up already. I mean, in some places you see pockets of it.
Yeah.
Naples, Florida, which I love the guy that owns a grocery store down there. But it's like our right to die. We have a right to control our own body. And I know my immune system.
Here's what I'll add, Carl, and I got to scoop, my man. Have a great weekend. Now that a vaccine is here, protecting yourself should be the most important thing. That's it. That should be importance and issue number one. Coming up next, the Supreme Court debacle. Is it expanding? We'll get to it coming up. I want to roll through a couple of updates with you here on both sides of the state line. Just like little tidbits that came down last night or yesterday where I was like, all right, that'll probably pique your interest going into the weekend. By the way, Josh Hawley is going to be here next hour at 8:30. So hang tight for that interview. Looking forward to that just over 45 minutes from now. Jason Smith, he's been on this show before. He is a Southeast Missouri congressman. And suddenly I saw this invite last night that popped up. And Jason Smith is holding an event on Friday, April 30th, 2 weeks from today, at Mar-a-Lago. It's a reception and private dinner for the 8th District of Missouri Congressman. He's also the Republican leader of the House Budget Committee. He's also on the House Committee Ways and Means. And the honorary host committee includes Governor Parson, Governor Kristi Noem of South Dakota, Congressman Doug Collins, Congresswoman Lauren Boebert, Congressman Lee Zeldin, Congressman Brian Mast, and Dr. Ronnie Jackson. But it's the location that should be very interesting to you. Jason Smith, a U.S. congressman out of Southeast Missouri, who is being rumored as somebody who could be running for U.S. Senate, is holding a fundraiser at Mar-a-Lago 2 weeks from today. Yes.
Such a nice man.
Exactly. That should make your eyebrows go up a little bit here. Because right now you've got Eric Schmidt, the attorney general, and Eric Greitens, the former governor, in this Missouri U.S. Senate race. I'll be with both of them tomorrow night at the Jackson County GOP Lincoln Days fundraiser that's taking place. And the thing sold out with like 300-plus tickets. So that's going to be a good time. Tomorrow night, Saturday night. So we're looking forward to being a part of that. But Jason Smith is the name that keeps popping up as a guy who could get into the race. And he's somebody who could also get a Trump endorsement. Now, I didn't know Jason Smith had any type of relationship with Donald Trump, but apparently they do. I don't know how. I don't know why. But when he's hosting an event at Mar-a-Lago, I'm like, okay, all right, John, that makes sense. That's
okay,
interesting.
I was just wondering if there was like some place called Mar-a-Lago just outside Branson. just tried to create confusion there.
Well, it does say
Mar-a-Lago, Mar-a-Lago.
It says here, John, Mar-a-Lago Club underneath Palm Beach, Florida.
Okay.
All right.
I was curious.
So they got the location.
Inquiring minds want to know.
Fair question, though.
Mm-hmm.
Very fair question.
Because like you say, I was like, really?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. No, that's I don't think that's an accident. Okay. Put it that way. It's not an accident.
It's impressive, I guess. Right.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. So that's going to be taking place. And I'm like, okay, if you're somebody who's looking at this and saying to yourself, well, what's this Senate race going to shape up to look like? I mean, that might be a telling thing for a lot of people. That might be something that makes you say, okay, well, that's definitely a tidbit worth following. Jason Smith's going to be down there at Mar-a-Lago. So that's part one of all this in the Missouri U.S. Senate race that I want to share with you. Then we've got this also on the other side of the state line. Third District of Kansas, of course, Sharice Davids, the incumbent. She's won two straight elections. Chris Croft, he is a state representative here in Johnson County. He's the chairman of a Kansas House committee that'll redraw the state's congressional districts. And apparently he is considering a run against Sharice Davids. First, he'd have to, of course, go up against Amanda Atkins in a primary. He met last month with National Republican Congressional Committee Chairman Tom Emmer to discuss a potential entry into the race in Kansas's 3rd Congressional District. So basically what they're saying up there in Topeka is that if he jumps into the race, he should not be on a committee that could redraw the state's congressional districts. Now, that's fine. That makes sense. It's not a scandal, though, right? Like, they want to make it out to be this scandal. He's going to be on the committee, and he's going to run for Congress, and he's going to redraw the lines to suit himself. I mean, the reality is this, and this is going to happen in every state, so don't act like it's just gerrymandering in Kansas. They're going to have to change the 3rd district. Now, I don't think that's because of gerrymandering for political reasons, but you can't have Johnson County as quickly as it's growing and as fast as it's growing. I think it's up 20 to 25% in population over the past 10 years. It can't be with Wyandotte County any longer. Just can't. With the way that, you know, suburban areas are growing rapidly and rural areas are traditionally shrinking, you can't have a situation where Wyandotte and Johnson are in the same congressional district. They're going to have to be broken up. Now, people are going to scream gerrymandering, but it's simply population breakdown, right? Now, I don't know what the 3rd district is going to look like. I have no clue. It's probably, if I'm just guessing here, maybe it goes Johnson County down south all the way to the state line or something like that. It looks like a finger or whatever. And then Wyandotte gets looped into the 2nd district. I don't know. But they can't stay together just based on how the populations are shifting across the state. It's very unlikely for that to stay in place. But I don't know, you know, I don't know if Chris Croft is a guy who's going to get into the race. I mean, Amanda Atkins got back in last week. She joined the show and She got a Mike Pompeo endorsement as well right out of the gates. Does that intimidate a big primary field from happening? I have no idea. No idea. But I know this. If I were state party chairman Mike Kuckelman, I would certainly not want to find myself in a situation where I'm trying to win back this third district seat and I've got a, you know, 4 or 5 person primary where people got to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars to get out of the primary. I wouldn't want to do that again. But I do know this, the 2022 cycle is going to be much more favorable to flipping this seat than it was in 2020. Why? Because one, Donald Trump's not at the top of the ticket to trigger a bunch of Johnson County moderates. And secondly, they're going to get, and they've already gotten a little glimpse here over the past not even 100 days on things like open borders, expanding the Supreme Court, and spending $2.5 trillion on this idea of infrastructure, which is anything but, right? They've gotten a little glimpse of that, and maybe they don't really like it as much as they thought. Maybe they realize that a guy that tweets mean stuff once in a while, but protected your liberties for the most part, maybe that wasn't so bad. You know, maybe having people who are radically trying to change basic things like voting rights, trying to federalize voting systems, trying to blow through another $2 trillion, trying to expand the Supreme Court. Maybe that's not really what we want. Maybe I should have seen beyond the bad orange, bad, bad, bad orange, orange, bad man. Maybe I should have done that. I might just wake people up. But I keep seeing these, you know, rumblings, Chris Croft getting into the race. I would just say this. I can't say it on the air. But either go or get off the pot, all right? Let's just either get in or get out. All right. Let's just come to a decision here and let's roll and let's figure out what we got. And if there's two, if it's Amanda Atkins and Chris Croft, fine. Make it two. Coming up next, a lot of money is going to be dumped into your local schools. I'll tell you why. Just after 8 o'clock, you know what that means. It's our first text to win keyword here of the day. 8 to 5 every hour on the hour. The text to win keyword right now is huge. Huge. To 95819 for your chance at a $100 MasterCard gift card. You get entered to win our $25,000 national grand prize. That's huge to 95819. Happy Friday. What do you think of that, John? Huge.
Yeah, I was going to say, don't spell it like Trump.
Yeah.
Not Y-U-G-E.
No,
H-U-G-E.
H, yeah. Yes. Not, don't spell it like Trump would.
Okay? Wrong.
You don't want to do that.
Huge.
No, it's huge. Huge. Say the H with me, all right? Huge to 95819. There you go. First keyword of the day. Next one's coming up just after 9 o'clock.
Next one's Bigly.
Yeah. Oh, man. Happy Friday. So I saw this story in the Shawnee Mission Post. Shawnee Mission School District's going to hire dozens of new staff to help students who struggled in the pandemic. I'm not laughing at that. I want kids to get help. But let's talk about why we are at the point where kids need help. Because we unscientifically took them out of the classroom and we let them fall behind. That's why. That's why. Here's the story, all right? Shawnee Mission School District wants to spend millions of dollars in federal pandemic relief funds in the coming years to hire dozens of new educators in an effort to address the negative impacts of COVID-19 on students' learnings. Well, first off, the negative impacts of COVID-19 on students' learning is not the right way to phrase this. The right way to phrase this, the negative impacts of school boards' decision-making around COVID-19. And that's the impact that is on students' learnings. Because how many of you have had your kids in the classroom in private school since September? I know many of you had because I've talked to you about it. Now, for those of you that you know, can't do that, and there's nothing wrong with not being able to do it, but you don't have a choice, right? You've got to send your kids to the public schools. You did not have school choice in all this. You had to do what your public school districts told you they were going to do. And they took a completely ridiculous stance. I understood it back, you know, a year ago at this time. Nobody knew what was going on. Nobody knew the impact on kids, right? But when we got to the fall, and still, when the CDC was saying, hey, we've got a lot of studies being done here that suggest kids aren't super spreaders of this, and the classroom is actually a pretty safe place to be because you can control the environment. You know who's coming in. You know who's coming out. We can space kids out a little bit. A lot of schools still decided, you know, let's not have the kids in the classroom. And now it's like, whoa, kids are falling behind. I can't believe it. Shocker.
Talk about a bombshell.
So now what is the play? Well, now the play is to spend millions of more dollars on trying to catch kids up because we force them into a virtual setting that doesn't work for the majority of kids because their attention spans are an ant's attention span. And now it's like, well, we got to find money. We got to hire people. That's going to cost you eventually. This is pretty common sense. Now, here's what Shawnee Mission says they're going to do. They're going to hire dozens of new educators. Well, where's that money coming from? All right, well, I guess a lot of it could be coming from COVID relief money, right? $130 billion being spent on schools over the next several years. And we told you how like $5 billion of that was going to be spent in the next school year, meaning the bulk of that, like 90% of that plus, was going to be spent after this school year. But what happens, and you tell me, what happens when those school years are up? You think that schools are just going to let people go? Like, when's the last time a public school said, we're just cutting the staff because, well, we don't have the money for them? No. No, you know what happens then? Then your property taxes get jacked up. That's what happens after that.
Yeah, I thought we were having a little bit of an issue finding teachers prior to the pandemic. Or it seems like there are quite a bit of recruiting ads even here locally to teach if you have a degree, and they'll help you learn what you need to know to teach.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what that supply and demand is going to be like.
Right. Yeah, I'm curious about that part of it.
Yeah, but we'll be finding out soon enough because apparently Shawnee Mission is going to hire dozens of people. Dozens. And eventually you're going to pay for that. And here's what's going to happen too. When they put that and they start jacking up your property taxes here before long, they're going to say, well, you don't care about the kids. Because that's what happens every time. Every time you're like, I don't know if we need to spend even more money. Oh, you don't care about the kids. That's it. Yeah, you just want the kids to suffer. Okay. All right. You're going to tell me that after you kept the kids out of the classroom for the past year based on little to no science? You're going to tell me I don't care about the kids? Please. All right. So how about this? Just so you have an idea exactly of what's been going on the past year, and we've been telling you this, by the way, through several studies. For all students, chronic absenteeism, Shawnee Mission, top 16% this year, up from 12% in 2018-19. For black students, the chronic absenteeism rate jumped from 20 to 29%. For Hispanic students, it jumped from 15 to 24%. For white students, it jumped from 9.5% to 11%. I mean, people acting like this is new. Holy smokes, we've been saying this. Who's going to be impacted the most by this horrible situation we've got our public school kids in? Those who are more likely to have, either two parents who are both working, those who are more likely to have a single parent home where the parents got to work a job or two, and that is more likely to be happening, just based on the data, for black and Latino kids. They were the ones and have been the ones getting impacted the most by all this. But because of COVID or something like that, when the kids don't spread it, generally speaking, and they certainly don't pass it on to their teachers, the study that I've shared over and over and over with you is the study out of North Carolina where 100,000 students and teachers were studied in rural, suburban, and urban settings, and they had a total of 32 cases over 9 weeks, zero from students to teachers. Zero. Massive studies like that being done, and we're just sitting here twiddling our thumbs. Well, COVID, can't have anybody in the classroom. Now, whoa, we got to hire more people to catch kids up. You cause your own problems, then you got to justify spending millions of dollars more to make up for your pathetically unscientific mistakes. It's just an embarrassment. Kelly is on KCMO. Hey, Kelly, good morning.
Good morning, Pete. Happy Friday, buddy.
Happy Friday. What's going on?
Okay. Now, this is going to take me a minute to get there, but I'm going to end Shawnee Mission's investigation.
Okay?
Now, hear me out.
Yeah.
The reason kids are falling behind is because they closed the schools when they didn't need to.
Yeah.
Done. Hey, done. Pay.
Did I lose you, Kelly? You still there? Kelly, you with us or are you gone, buddy? I think we might have lost.
I think the NEA is silencing him.
Yeah, I think. We lost you there, Kelly. We're at 5767710. Our text line is 816-576-7710. You don't have to be in the you don't have to be a parent in the Shawnee Mission School District to chime in on this, but if you are, I mean, just know that here's what's going to happen. They're going to hire dozens of people, as they say, to try to help kids get back on track after doing virtual learning for the past year. And if you think that those dozens of employees are magically going to go away after a year or two when everyone's supposedly caught back up, you're kidding yourself, all right? I still got the offer on the beachfront property in Salina. It's looking better by the day. Yes, Mark?
I have kids in Shawnee Mission.
Oh, you do?
Yeah. So I think what's going to happen is they've been trying to get some teachers to retire there for a few years.
Oh.
So I think it could go the way of the next couple of years could be transition from these workers into
regular roles.
I don't know for sure, but.
Well, here's the thing, though, and I'm sure that they're trying to do that because in the teachers' unions, you know, the longer you stay, the more money you make. But if they're still adding employees, they're not going to save money doing that, you know? It's going to cost you more, man. I hope you're saving. That tax bill's going up here before long.
Oh, yeah. Always does.
Always does. Always does. Oh, boy. All right. 5767710. Our text line is 816-576-7710. It's good to be with you here on a Friday morning on KCMO Talk Radio. I'm just telling you, I'm just looking into the future here on your behalf. That's all I'm doing. I'm taking you through this, and I'm telling you what's to come. And now I want to hear from you because the federal dollars are there right now. They're not going to be there forever. All right. They never are. But it looks good for the time being. And then it's going to be like, whoa, we need more money. Where's that money going to come from? It's going to come from you. It's going to come from you. Josh Hawley's going to be here in 20 minutes. Hang tight on KCMO. This is really disappointing, too. Shawnee Mission sharing some of its numbers here this week and why they got to hire dozens of more educators for the mistakes that they made as a school board and as a district due to COVID-19. F grades, F students have spiked this year, with the biggest increase coming in middle school. In middle school at Shawnee Mission, the total number of F grades make up 15% of all the grades. In the previous 2 years, F grades were just 5% of all the grades. In high school, it went up to 11%, up from 5%. I mean, these are terrible numbers. And I'm sure the teachers, by the way, I would imagine, I'd like to hear this from a teacher at 5767710, but I'm sure that they have been more lenient on grades this year. Yet still, the number of people getting Fs have more than doubled in Shawnee Mission. So now the answer to our unscientific mistake to not having kids in the classroom for the past year is to spend even more money on hiring more educators to catch people up. And by the way, you know what this mostly means too, right? More educators means what? More educators means more administrators. And that's where the real money is. That's where the big bucks, the BUCO bucks is, and the administrative levels. That's how you get Blue Valley superintendents going from making $260,000 to $360,000 over the span of a 5-year period. That's how that works. Alex, over the park, KCMO. What's up, Alex? How are you?
Hey, Pete. Good morning. Yeah, I think this is just tragic. And like you said, I don't think it's anything surprising to anybody out there who's been following these education concerns. But one of the things I kind of wonder is if some of these school districts are starting to panic a little bit, knowing that they're going to have to get back to their regular standardized testing next fall, probably. So they do a standardized test in the fall and they do one in the spring. And then the breakdown of those tests show like where your student is and the cohort of the school and the district and then nationwide. And so I think we're going to see a big reflection of the things that you already talked about. And then parents are going to be able to take that information and say, is the school or school district working best for my child? And maybe they'll move to another district, or maybe they'll go to a private school or do some other education decision.
Yeah. Well, I say this somewhat facetiously, but I think it's also coming true in some ways. Standardized tests are soon going to be deemed racist, so I think that will be the answer there for why we can't do standardized testing anymore, and then kids will fall behind even further because they're unfair or something like that. But then to your latter point about private schools, I mean, I think that a lot of parents who already had the means to use school choice have done that. I think right now the people left in many cases are those who don't really have that option, you know?
Yeah, I agree. And I also think that there's going to be a big discrepancy in education amongst the sciences in particular, because I know of a son right now in high school, and he has taken high school chemistry, and he has had one lab experiment. And even though they've been in full-time school since spring break, and they were hybrid pretty much the majority of the year, mm-hmm. They are not choosing to spend the time on hands-on activities. And so you think about trying to learn something like chemistry without doing any labs just doesn't make sense to me.
That it doesn't. It doesn't. Hey, Alex, great call. Thanks for making it. Really appreciate that. Yeah, I mean, that's, whew. I mean, they're struggling. They're struggling, and we've done it to ourselves. It's a self-inflicted wound. And now the answer is, of course, going to be, well, we have to spend more money on public education. And I'm not against it in the right reasons. I'm saying this as someone who went public school K through 12, but whew, boy, I don't see how this ends. And the federal money is going to be nice and a windfall. Everyone's going to be rolling in dough, but eventually the gravy train ends. Caitlin is in Greenwood. Hi, Caitlin. Good morning.
Good morning. How you doing, Pete?
Good. How are you?
Oh, good. This is a pretty touchy subject for me and my family right now.
Why is that?
My daughter is in middle school. I won't say which one, in the Lee Summit R7 school district. Okay. And I just received a letter that they're reporting me to DFS and the Lee Summit Police Department because she's missed 15 days of school, which half are virtual, or because she had a fever and had to get a COVID test.
So
I'm battling with the school right now.
She missed 15 days of virtual learning, partially because she was sick. And you have gotten reported by the school district to where?
If she misses 5 more days of school, they'll report me to the Department of Family Services.
Really?
Yeah. So it's been kind of a mess. She's been struggling a lot with middle school, and I see why, unfortunately. So it's really sad. They are doing some stuff, like some teachers are reaching out and, you know, help time and all that, but it's just a big mess.
Are you home during the day with her, or is she basically by herself because you're at work?
Oh, she's at home now. They changed virtual on Friday today. Last week, I'm actually on my way to college right now, so I'm at Johnson County for welding. It's thankfully a lab.
So you're going to college to obviously get yourself and your family ahead. You've got a kid who is in middle school, who's trying to basically educate herself at home, or himself. Sorry, I missed that part of it.
Oh, that's fine.
Go ahead. Sorry. I just want to make sure I have the story.
And my 6-year-old daughter's at home right now virtually learning kindergarten today.
Is anybody with them, or are they working with each other?
We've got my husband's home, but, you know, it's rough. I think everybody's struggling right now just to make sure that their kids aren't missing out. And unfortunately, they are.
And who told you that they were going to call DFS on you?
Oh, I got a letter in the mail.
Jeez.
Yeah.
I mean, it's totally fine. I know it's my job to be able to speak and say something, but I'm just kind of stunned by this.
Their approach is completely wrong. Instead of, you know, reaching out and saying, hey, we see that she's getting not so good grades in these classes. Well, you know, why is she missing these days? You just get a letter in the mail stating, oh, well, you know, she's missed these. Oh, they're excused absences. But even though they're still excused and not medical, then we're going to report you to the DFS or call the police department.
What's your husband say about, is he working at home or is he trying to work with them through school every day?
He works. He works at home, and he's in the National Guard as well. So we're pretty busy.
Yeah. So he can't just sit. He can't just sit over their shoulders all day.
No, it's hard. We usually do a lot of the homework at nighttime when one of us are home and have time to sit down. But anyways,
wow.
You have a great day. I mean, I'm not the only one. I'm sure other people are like that. But with the percentages of F that, you know, people are getting, it correlates with attendance.
Wow. Well, Caitlin, I can't thank you enough for sharing your story. Yeah. I really appreciate it. And thank you
for everything, Pete. You're awesome.
Thank you for hey, thanks for sharing it. I know a lot of people are nodding along with you, so I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Have a great day. Continue to keep it up there. It's amazing to me. The government causes a problem, and now the government goes after this family for the problem that it caused. Mm-hmm. That is unscientific. everything that is wrong right there. I'll be thinking about that call with Caitlin all weekend, by the way.
And she's going to college for welding.
Yeah.
Going into the trades. Nice,
coming up
nice
next,
move.
Josh Hawley is going to be on KCMO Talk Radio. We are approaching 9 o'clock on a Friday morning here on KCMO. We're going to have your next text to win keyword just after the top of the hour for a chance at our $25,000 workday payday. So hang tight for that. Meantime, it is Friday morning at this time. That means we always do it. It's our buy, sell, hold.
It's time to buy.
Buy.
Sell.
I don't have it today on 12 and a half, 15.
And hold.
John, you are up, my friend. What do we got?
Let's see. Buy, sell, or hold? How about Chelsea Clinton trying to get Tucker Carlson fired?
Sell the heck out of this. I mean, what? Chelsea, anybody with the last name Clinton trying to cancel somebody else? Oh, boy. It just drips in irony and hypocrisy, does it not?
Seems so.
Yeah. Here's what Chelsea Clinton wrote on Twitter yesterday. Chelsea Clinton wrote, Tucker Carlson consistently spews racist, bigoted, anti-Semitic hate and misinformation across his platform. He does not deserve a microphone. Now, what happened to the days when we could just be like, geez, I really disagree with that person. I'd love to debate them, but they're just kooky and they won't, you know, like, I'll give you a great example. The craziest person I believe on TV is Joy Reid. It used to be Rachel Maddow, but Joy Reid has taken the cake on MSNBC. She's nuts. She's absolutely nuts. But I'll say this. She's got a right to be on TV. I she lies a lot, but she's got a right to be on TV. I'm not going to sit here and say MSNBC should, or the, you know, FCC should take away her microphone. Like, I just would love to debate a Joy Reid. I'd love to see Joy Reid challenged. It's disappointing that there are millions of people that consume the content and think it's all accurate, but I don't sit here and say, take away her mic. Like, I don't do that, John. Maybe some people do, but I don't do that.
I like music, and so you kind of learn when somebody reviews something, critics, you're like, well, this guy doesn't like this type of music anyway, so what he's saying is just out the window. Right?
Good analogy.
You know?
Good analogy.
A critique on movie or anything.
Yeah.
Movies, et cetera.
Yeah. When Hillary Clinton says that about somebody that she agrees with politically, maybe I'll take her seriously. But this is, it's really unbelievable arrogance to be of the opinion that someone doesn't deserve a microphone or a platform because you don't agree with them. I mean, by the way, this started obviously with social media. We know what Twitter and Facebook are currently doing, basically removing people that they don't agree with. They don't hold the same standards to those on the left that they do on the right, apparently. And we just kind of whistle past the graveyard. And thankfully, TV can't do that right now. But who's to say it's not coming? I mean, that's why, and I'm just going to quickly, before we get to our next thing, tie this into what Josh Hawley was just saying around the whole idea of breaking up the big tech monopolies, as he puts it. The free market side of me is like, hey, you know what? Facebook wouldn't exist if MySpace was more competent, right,
that's
John?
That's what I feel.
Yeah, so that's how I feel too. But when I also see Facebook, which is basically the modern day post office, not allowing people to share articles with other people from the New York Post because they don't like the content, that's where I say, okay, if you are the modern day post office, like, what if the post office was being like, no, we're going to return this to sender because we don't like the content in the mail? Like, that's not cool. So that's where I start to have more sympathy around this idea, even though my instincts are to be like, no, let the marketplace figure this whole thing out. But I'm starting to at least see some of what's being said here by people that I typically agree with, but this one I'm uncertain on, but I'm starting to at least understand it when I see more of this censorship going on.
Yeah.
What else?
There we go. Buy, sell, or hold. Missouri lawmakers trying to make daylight saving permanent. Saving, singular.
Saving.
Right? Bam.
Every time I say daylight savings, I get the caller or the texter.
Yeah.
It's daylight saving. It's singular. Okay. All right. Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Professor. I'm going to hold this. Now, here's why. Normally, I'd buy it. But after the Missouri Republican-led State House on Wednesday advanced a proposal to make daylight saving time permanent, I thought to myself, great. But then I said, if Kansas doesn't do it, and if other states don't do it, then we're screwed.
We're on an island.
Then we're screwed. All right? So, like, if that happens, what? This radio show will start at 5 a.m. in Missouri and 6 a.m. in Kansas?
Yeah, something like that.
In the winter? Because we fall back? So, starting in November, will be a 5 a.m. start in Missouri, a 6 a.m. start in Kansas. I don't want that. I mean, I love the idea of not having daylight saving time and just staying where we're at right now. But as much as I don't like the federal government deciding things, I want things to be on a state-by-state basis. This really can't be done on a state-by-state basis.
100% agree.
So I'm going to hold off on that. Yeah, Mark, what's up?
Oh, I was going to say we need Joe to do an executive order on that one.
Oh, no.
You don't want that?
No. No executive orders from Joe on anything.
Not even on daylight saving?
No. That's way too much power. You can't have a guy with a stroke of a pen changing the clocks on me, okay? You can't do it. I'm sorry, Mark. I know you want to see Joe use the pen, but we can't have that, even on an issue that I agree with him on. All right, what's next there, John?
All right, wrap it up. Buy, sell, or hold. Hunter Biden's book bombing out.
Buy. Did you see this? Hunter Biden, who went on all these softball interviews with CBS last week, this book is called Beautiful Things. I don't know if that is reference to the hookers that he was sleeping with while he was cracked out or what that reference exactly is. But anyway, the book has sold just 10,000 copies in the first week. For a celebrity book with so much PR, I mean, that's horrible. On Amazon, the book is right now ranked 208th, Hunter Biden's book. I mean, that's pathetic. By the way, Dr. Seuss's books are right now rocking and rolling on the New York Times bestsellers list. Cat in the Hat, Places You'll Go, Green Eggs and Ham, they're all rocking and rolling. Hunter's book should have been titled The Places I Went. How about that? All right.
See, the Facebook meme says somewhere there's a 2-year-old whose mom is a stripper, dad's a crackhead, and grandpa's the president.
Oh, shit. News in 2 minutes. We're back in 5 with you. Our text to win keyword and more on KCMO. Wow. Did you see that? Cardi B got canceled for saying we should not defund the police, or at least some people tried to cancel her. Good to be with you just after 9 o'clock on a Friday here on KCMO. I'll get to that story coming up here, but first I've got your national text to win keyword. It is luck. That's luck. L-U-C-K to 95819. Your chance at a $100 MasterCard gift card. And you get entered to win our $25,000 Workday Payday Grand Prize. That is luck to 95819. We've got keywords the top of every hour, 8 to 5, right here on KCMO Talk Radio. Yeah, so here's the deal. Cardi B, famous rapper, for those of you not aware. That's okay. I know some in the listening audience might be like, Cardi who? What's a Cardi B? Can somebody explain? What is that, an animal? No, it's a rapper. All right, it's a female rapper. So Cardi B wrote on Twitter to somebody who said defund the police. She wrote, that's BS to me. We need cops, and that's facts. We just need strict laws for cops. If you shoot somebody just like civilians, you will go to jail that same day, get charged, wait for bond, and go to trial. That will make you think twice about shooting anyone. Now, besides the fact that her premise is generally mistaken, she came out against defunding the police. She said, that's bull, Cardi B. Now, what happened? She has since deleted that tweet. Deleted it. No longer there. After Cardi B, one of the most popular rappers, came out against defunding the police. Huh. How about that? Trying to cancel one of the most famous, and by the way, just in case you're wondering, Cardi B is a black female rapper. She said, no, defunding the police is bad policy, is a bad idea. Now, she probably couldn't tell you the nuanced nature of why it's a bad idea, but either way, she came out against it. And now it's like, whoa, we can't have you saying that. I'm sure her handlers were like, whoa, that's not woke. That's not what the people expect. That's not what they want. No, you can't come. Wait, that's the most sense Cardi B's ever made in her life. And it got removed. She removed it herself. The smartest thing she's ever said in her life, she decided to take down. What does that tell you about where the conversation's at right now? And she, think about this too, Cardi B is not even powerful enough to stand by this. Even she is afraid as a black woman of the woke mob. Like, that is a telling sign. when Cardi B, one of the most famous and powerful women right now in show business, who is a black female, so she checks off a lot of the woke boxes outside of maybe being a trans, there's not much else she could do. She stands by her statement, and she still is in threat of getting canceled. You've got no chance, okay? If Cardi B has no chance as an incredibly popular and famous black woman, then you've got zero shot. Zero shot. That should tell you a lot right there about where we're at. Should tell you a heck of a lot. Now, this leads into what happened here last night in a story that has gotten a lot of attention. And it involves what happened in Chicago. A 13-year-old boy, Adam Toledo, was shot and killed by a cop in Chicago. What happened here, 13-year-old boy, and this was at 2:30 in the morning. I mean, it is tragic. But what is a 13-year-old boy doing on the streets at 2:30 in the morning? My goodness. It's horrible. So here's the story. Here's what first off it sounded like. And I want you to hear this first. Before I tell you any of this story, I want you to hear this body camera footage first from the cop. Because the notion that this is somehow part of a narrative that cops are out hunting people. Just listen to this body camera footage. Listen to what happens. And the story, just real quick, is the kid's running through a dark alley with a gun. He drops this gun seconds before he turns around, and the cop does shoot him in the chest. And the kid was putting his hands up. In full disclosure, the kid was putting his hands up, but he did have a gun in his hands that he had dropped seconds prior to that as he turns around and the cop shoots him. Now, I don't know what's going to come out of this. I don't. But listen to the body camera footage here.
Please stop! Stop right now! Show me your f***ing head. Stop it. Stop it. Shots fired. Shots fired. Get an ambulance up here now. Look at me. Look at me. Look at me. You all right? Where are you shot? Sawyer in the alley. West alley. Need an ambulance. Got a gunshot victim. Shots fired by the police.
By the policeman, Cora?
Where you shot, man? Where you shot? Stay with me. Stay with me.
All right, 10-4. We'll get an ambulance rolling.
Somebody bring the medical kit now.
Okay, can someone send the medical kit, please? 24th and Sawyer, please. That one over there.
All right, I need a medical kit. Chest wound to the upper chest.
I got a medical kit.
Dude, hurry up.
I'm sorry, can I copy you?
I got a medical kit.
What'd
you shot at? Right here?
Yeah, top in the
chest. That's the body camera footage of the cop who shot this 13-year-old kid, Adam Toledo, who died this week. I mean, it's horribly sad. Horribly sad. But when you look at the video, Adam Toledo has a gun in his hand a half a second before he shoots the cop shot him. You've got a half a second to make that decision. The video shows it, and I'll put it up on Twitter at Pete Mundo. You can see in the still camera footage that he's got a gun in his hand a half second before he starts turning his body around and does drop the gun. So, yes, he is technically unarmed as he gets shot and puts his hands up. But you can see here that there is a gun in his hand a half a second before as he's starting to turn around. You've got a half a second to make a decision in a dark alleyway at 2 a.m. with an armed suspect. To give you some perspective here, the officer who's got under a second to make that decision on whether or not to fire, it takes a third of a second to blink. So in the blink of an eye, you have to decide if you're going home to your family or if you're not. It's easy to sit here. It's very easy to sit here and look at that and say, boy, on our kid 13, I mean, it's horrible. It is horrible. But put that in, you know, I was at the KCPD Training Academy this week, and I went through some of their training trials that they do. I had told you about this earlier in the week. But you know, when I'm standing there and we've got these projector screens going through real life scenarios, and you're trying to figure out in a nanosecond, what do you do? Do you draw a weapon? Do you not? Do you, how do you handle this individual? Whether they're suicidal, whether they're, you know, a traffic stop, you're getting shot. What do you do? Boy, it is so easy to sit here on social media, on the radio, on TV, and come to an obvious conclusion after the fact. It is so easy to do that. But it's not real life. It's not. And as one of the officers said to me the other day, they said, you literally have to go through 10,000 options in your mind, and you have to make these decisions with 10,000 options in the span of seconds, nanoseconds in some cases. You've got kids in the city running around at 3 a.m. with loaded guns. And to sit here and pretend like the police are the big problem in all this, you don't want to solve anything. You don't care. You're posturing. You don't have the guts to tell the truth. I want to share something else. Adam Toledo had been missing for 2 days before he was shot by the police. 2 days. 13-year-old kid on the streets with a loaded gun. His mother didn't report it. The parental neglect that this child suffered is a tragedy. We have in many ways, a catastrophic parenting problem in this country. And in cities, it's even worse. And to look at this story and simply make it about what you want to make it about to fit your narrative, it doesn't mean it's not, it's sad. It doesn't mean it's something that we all wish didn't happen. It doesn't mean it doesn't make you sick to your stomach. It does. It should. If you're a human being, it should. But you're talking about confronting an armed perp in a dark alley at 2:30 a.m. with 8/10 of a second to make a life or death decision. Tell me how that works for you. 5767710. Our text line is 816-576-7710. We will welcome you in on this conversation because it's the latest example that is being used to fit a narrative. And you can poke holes in that narrative very, very quickly. Whether you want to say it, whether it's PC to say it or not, it is easy to do. But it doesn't make it any less tragic or sad. It doesn't. 5767710. We'll welcome you on coming up here. We've got the caller of the day at the bottom of the hour on KCMO Talk Radio.